Note, we should, before we begin looking at Pesach particularly, and that is the Seder is on Friday night this year. So that has its own challenges. You know, we don't have the liberties that we have on Yom Tov, to pop the food into the oven, etc. We have all the limitations of Shabbos. So really, we have to be ready pretty much for the Seder for that reason by the time we bench Licht on Erev Shabbos. We don't have the latitude that we normally have. Okay, we can make last minute, you know, preparations during the Seder, put something into the oven that should be ready for the meal. We don't have that latitude. So that's the particular issue that we have this year that we have to be attentive to. And what's the Shabbos is not going to be much different than going from the first day Yom Tov to the second day Yom Tov, that we can't do any malocha until after this month. But the first night presents its own daunting challenge. Friday night Seder, everything has to be ready before. So the pressure is even a little bit more intense than it is on every other Erev Pesach. Now, before we begin the halachas, there's a very important statement defined by the House of Brisk. We talk in Shas about Schus Ovois, and we also talk about Bris Ovois. And Schus Ovois has limitations. It's a bank account. And the question is how much we can spend from that bank account and still have a balance. That's a question in Shas, Rabbi Saul Salanta talks about it. But the House of Bris taught us that besides Schus Ovois, there's Bris Ovois. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam made a covenant, a bris, with Avraham Avinu. And that bris includes the fact that we are eternally his people. We are bound to him eternally, and he is bound to us eternally. And for better or for worse. Meaning, if we're great Jews, so the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has nachas from us. If we're not such great Jews, we're a wayward child, but we remain his child. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is bound up with us no matter where we are. We will never be abandoned. The Chumash spells it out in particular. Even at the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, lo ma'astim v'lo ga'altim l'chaloisam l'hofer brisitam. We will never rescind the bris. The bris is eternal. And that's what we have to bank on. We don't have to worry in and of itself what is our spiritual level, what's our standing before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That's a very personal aspect of avodah, service of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. But the standing of Klal Yisrael before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we're guaranteed. And how much we're guaranteed, my mind harks back many, many years. The year was Tovshin Choftes. You could do a little bit of math yourself. But a while ago. And I had the privilege, it was a very signal moment in my life, to spend the entire Chag of Pesach with Rabbi Cheska Sarnas at Tzal Chemin Roshua. It was my schus there at the storm with him throughout the entire Yom Tov I spent with him. And one day he spoke in Yeshiva, he spoke in Shri Yishol Pesach. And he brought a very interesting chazal. The chazal is very, very obscure. A friend of mine eventually found it in a sefer of one of the early Achrayim, who quotes a Medrash Kodum, an ancient Medrash. But we do not have an Amid Roshim. This Medrash does not appear, but it's one of the early Achrayim cites it as an ancient Medrash. In Parshas B'Shalach, there's a pasuk which states, V'omar Paro Livnei Yisrael Levuchim Hem Ba'aretz. Paro said to the Jewish people, Levuchim Hem Ba'aretz, that the Jews are lost in the Midbar, they're wandering around. Now what does it mean, Livnei Yisrael? The Jews had left. So Rashi, in fact, translates the pasuk that it means Livnei Yisrael means Al Odos Yisrael, concerning Klal Yisrael. He said about Klal Yisrael. But the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel tells us something else. For Omar Paro, Livnei Yisrael, that Dosan and Aviram did not accompany the Jews as they left Mitzrayim. Dosan and Aviram are no more ready to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu at this juncture that it's time to leave Mitzrayim as they were at any other time in their career. And they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going? So long, hasta la vista, we'll see you around. And they did not accompany Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what we find in the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel. The Medrash Kodom tells us the following. How is it that Dosan and Aviram, in fact, we find them throughout the stay in the Midbar, all the way up until Adas Korach, where they meet the demise? So how do they appear there if they didn't leave Mitzrayim? So the Medrash tells us something very interesting. That the Ribbono Shel Olam sent a Malach for them, and the Malach brought them to Yamsuf, and made a Kriyas Yamsuf just for Dosan and Aviram, and they marched through the Yamsuf, and the Yamsuf closed again. So the Sona Zatzal stated the following. Until now that I learned this Medrash, I would have thought that Kriyas Yamsuf was made for the collective entity of Klal Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael had to arrive at Har Sinai safely to accept the Torah, and the world is built upon that. Bereishis bara Elokim, as Rashi tells us, Bereishis is bishvil haTorah shenikras Bereishis. So that's what I would have thought. But he says, but this Medrash taught me something else, that Kriyas Yamsuf was made for every individual Jew. Every individual Jew was so significant before the Ribbono Shel Olam that they were worthy of Kriyas Yamsuf. And even two such scoundrels as Dothan and Aviram would be a thorn throughout in the sight of Moshe Rabbeinu and ultimately meet their demise in Korach's rebellion. Even they were significant before the Ribbono Shel Olam, that they merited a private Kriyas Yamsuf. So when we talk about Bris Ovis, the standing that we have before the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not only a collective standing, it's the standing of every individual in Klal Yisrael is so significant before the Ribbono Shel Olam. The celebration of Pesach is the celebration of Pesach al Adas HaKodesh. We have a Beis HaMikdash. We bring a Korban Pesach. Klal Yisrael assembles in Yerushalayim. That we understand. Upon the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, the philosophical question arises, is what is the point of the Seder? A person was let out of jail, so he celebrates. As long as he's out of jail. One day, the authorities get upset at him again, they arrest him, they throw him back in jail. So in jail, he's going to celebrate that he was released. Listen, it's over. Unfortunately, it's over. That's it. So there's nothing to celebrate anymore. So why are we celebrating Yitzias Mitzrayim when now we're in Golos again, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? The Sivas, among others, tells us that when the Ribbono Shel Olam took us out of Mitzrayim, part and parcel of the deal was that he would redeem us from every future golus which would afflict Klal Yisrael. That's the relationship that we have with him. He says, and thereby, he says, a person got out of jail and he established a very strong relationship with the king. The king loves him because he's done great things for the king. And he knows that no matter what's going to happen to him, the king is always going to be at his side to save him. So some fellows come from the bureaucracy, and they get upset, and they throw him into jail. He doesn't despair in the least. He still remembers the first time that he got out of jail. Because he's assured this is a temporary problem. The king is going to come and release him again. So the fact that I was redeemed the first time is something to celebrate throughout. The Ribbono Shel Olam took us out of Mitzrayim, and he promised us that he would redeem us no matter what happened. I was once in a taxi in Eretz Yisrael with a member of the, an important figure in the army intelligence. And he said, whatever the circumstances, he once got swept up by the local police in Yerushalayim and thrown into jail as they were arresting people. And then they realized, he told them he wants to speak to the police chief. When the police chief got on the line and realized, he apologized to him. So he told the police chief, nobody has to apologize to me. See, nothing could come of the fact that they locked me up in jail other than the guys that locked me up are going to have a hard time. So that's all that's going to happen. So I had no fears. He says, but I will not forgive you for the fact that you swept up other innocent people that didn't belong in jail with me, and they don't have my contacts, and they're going to have a problem. But for me, he took me down to the station house. I had no problem. I knew soon enough I'll be out, and the ones that started in with me, they'll have to answer for it. The Ribbono Shel Olam said that he will always be with us. Nothing will change in that. There's a remarkable statement from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer died circa 1840. 1840 was before anyone in the world dreamed of, except a few Talmidim and a Vilna Goyim and a Chassam Sofer, but no one dreamed that we're going to build a state in Eretz Yisrael. The notion of Zionism, that we were going to enter Eretz Yisrael on a mass basis, did not exist when he died. And yet, Chassam Sofer writes, and it's true of many things that he writes, there's a sense of Ruach HaKodesh, a prophetic vision that he has. The Chassam Sofer bases it upon a Rambam in the first parak in Sanhedrin. And he writes the following. The Novi and Yirmiyahu writes, we read it the second day of Rosh Hashanah. One pasuk states, "V'shovu me'eretz oyev," we will return from the land of hostility of our enemies. The very next pasuk says, "V'shovu vonim legvulam," that the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return to their boundaries. The same idea, one pasuk after the next, yet presented totally differently. Now, Chassam Sofer tells us there's a very significant difference between these two. V'shovu me'eretz oyev, he says, is before Mashiach comes, there will be a huge ingathering of Jewish people of Admas HaKadosh and Eretz Yisrael. That will take place. And that's v'shovu me'eretz oyev. We will leave the land of our adversaries and return to Eretz Yisrael. But what will be lacking? Our voice, I listen carefully. What will be lacking? The Beis HaMikdash. V'shovu vonim legvula means legvula k'dusha, to the holy precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. Chassam Sofer left this world just over 175 years ago. Could there be a more prophetic statement of the era in which we live? A huge gathering of Jews that have returned to Eretz Yisrael, almost approximating half the Jewish people today. And what's lacking? V'shovavonim levulam, the Migdash. We await the Rabbeinu Shalom's revelation. So I'm saying, for 175 years ago, put this down, ink the paper, that this is the way it's going to be, and we look out the window, that's exactly the way it is. If he lived in 2018, he couldn't have given a better description, but he gave it before 1840. We live in wondrous times. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam has let us see the fulfillment, as the Chassam Sofer writes, in the first day of the division of Yirmiyahu, V'shovu me'eretz oyev. And we await V'shovu vonim legvulam. The realization that the Chassam Sofer saw this Ruach Kotcha with his prophetic vision so long ago gives us additional inspiration and strength. If the first half of what the Chassam Sofer wrote came true exactly as he said, and he describes what we await under present circumstances, we remain absolutely confident that that day is not far off from coming, when the Rabbeinu Shalom's revelation will take place. And we will in fact merit V'shovu vonim legvulam to return to the precincts of Kedusha, the holy precincts of the Beis HaMikdash, Be'ezras Hashem.
Amen.
That is what this Chag portends, Rav Yisrael. This Chag is the Chag HaGula. B'nisin Migalu or B'nisin Asirin Migal. We will redeem from Mitzrayim in Egypt, and the Mashiach will come. And listen to. We will celebrate Pesach with the Mashiach. That will announce the arrival of Mashiach Tzidkenu, the month of Nisan. This Chag is the Chag of Geula. And it's the most wondrous of the Yom Tovim, the one that's so different than anything else that we experience during the year. It has a very, very special place in the heart of all of Klal Yisrael. The night of the Seder is one of the magical experiences of Yahadus. A person that sat at a Seder, the imprint that it's made upon his being, on his soul, is so strong. 50, 60 years later, it's still vivid. You can think back to the nights of the Seder with our parents and our grandparents. And they're vivid. What took place, how it took place, the atmosphere that took place, how striking it was. A half a lifetime later. But ultimately, we are people of the halacha. To fulfill and to merit the sanctity, the kedushas hachag, comes only through the fulfillment of the halacha. We are not a people of culture. Cultural experiences are very easy. You go out to Central Park, you have a concert, come back, you had a cultural experience on July 4th. It was very nice. Not much you have to invest in it. But to merit the Kedusha with which the Rabbeinu Shalom sanctifies us takes a great deal of work. It takes fulfillment of the halacha. It's not the matzah ball which brings that sanctity. It's the commitment to the Rabbeinu Shalom's halacha. From that standpoint, I want to go over in brief the basics of what we have to do to prepare for this chag. And I do want to daven marav at 9:30, so I'm going to have to go a little bit on the fast side, but that's the limitation that I have this year. We'll start with all kashering in the kitchen has to begin. All kashering in the kitchen has to begin with the stovetop. That's the first thing that we have to kasher, because most of the kashering that we're going to do necessitates having hot water. And the only place that, so we have to start with the stovetop. So let's take a look. Stovetops, from this halachic standpoint, come in two types. Those are gas burners and electric burners. Now, the first thing we need to know is not to do overkill. The grates on top of the stove do not need to be put into a self-cleaning oven. And in fact, you may even destroy them if you put them into a self-cleaning oven. People have done it, and the things just melted, they warped, and disintegrated. Anything that we do for the kasha, the grates, as the Rama tells us, is a chumrah. The ikra, the dinner, in the strict letter of the law, we don't have to do anything. The grates are automatically kosher at Pesach. It's not the practice of Klal Yisrael to conduct ourselves that way, so we don't. So we do kashering. The kashering is ultimately a minimal kashering. If one has gas burners, all you have to do, I mean, you obviously have to clean the stovetop well, but you have to make sure there's no chametz around. And what you need to do is to put on the gas, set it just below the grates, and make a little teepee of aluminum foil just over the grate, not over the parts in between, not over the enamel, because otherwise you're going to singe the enamel and you'll regret it afterwards. Just over the grate, make a little teepee. So that it's not, the flame doesn't hit the aluminum foil. 15 minutes like that, and it's kosher. That's all you need to do. And we'll get to the rest of what you have to do with the stove. If you have an electric stove, it's even easier. Just turn it on high for a couple of minutes, and it's kosher. If you're not sure if it's kosher, you want to be absolutely sure, take a piece of aluminum foil, throw it onto there. After it's on for about 3 minutes, it'll turn red. And that's way past what you have to do, and just close the fire and go to the next one.
You don't have to put on a teepee in the beginning?
An electric, no. So that's very easy. And when it turns red, it's already on overkill. That's more than you have to do. Now, obviously, the rest of the stovetop is not really kasherable, the material that it's made from, nor the methods that you might have to kasher it with. You know, in commercial, stovetops are kasherable. I mean, they're made of steel, basically. And therefore, they're quite kasherable. What we use in the house is not made of material that's kasherable. So the first thing we have to do is we have to cover the stovetop, wash the stovetop and the drip pans, and then cover with heavy foil the stovetop and the drip pans. And the heavy foil, I say, so that it doesn't tear. If you're not secure that it's not going to tear, then put on two layers of heavy foil. We personally use in my own home, there's a very, very heavy duty aluminum foil. It's almost like aluminum. It's like light metal. It bends like metal. It's not foil. You have to cut it with a scissor or a knife. And that, Baruch Hashem, you put it on, and it will not tear in the entire chag. So that's what we cover the stove with, so we don't have problems with the foil tearing. Now you need to cover the splashbacks, especially around the stove, and this is Midino, because steam goes onto the splashbacks of the stove, the back of the stove, the wall that's just behind it, and it absorbs chometz the entire year. Now also to cover the oven hoods, if there's hoods on top, because also steam from the chometz goes up, but we don't want steam from the Pesach food going and then dripping back down again on the food. Now we have to be careful if you're covering the back of a stovetop, especially if your oven is inside the same device as the stove, you don't have a separate freestanding wall oven, so your oven is together with your stovetop, and there are vents someplace on the oven, on the stovetop, and you have to be careful not to cover those vents so that the steam, so that the heat can properly vent out of the oven. So that you do have to be careful about. You should wash off the handles with, you know, which are used for the controls. If you want even to pour hot water on them, that's perhaps even better, so that there's no concern that there's any chametz in any way that could come from them on Pesach. So the jets where the fire comes out of, you just have to see that they're clean, no kashering is necessary on them at all. The underneath area of food falls under the stove, obviously, they don't have to go nuts about it, but you're not interested in having a bunch of pasta down there on the chag. Lozu aderach. It may not make you a problem, but it's not the way to do things. That's basically what you need to do for a stovetop. Now, once you have a stovetop... Yeah.
Yesterday, the rabbis mentioned that the knobs, that you turn the gas up and down,
yeah,
soaked in bleach.
They soak them in something that just to make sure that they're 100% clean. They soak them in ammonia and bleach or whatever for a short while. But 15, 20 minutes just to see that whatever goes on there comes off. Yes.
What about the cloth or any push buttons on the backsplash?
So you mean the controls? Yeah. Obviously, you're going to leave them.
They're
uncovered.
Not anything that comes off. They're like it's like a touch pad.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to leave it uncovered. That's all. Now.
One second. There's another.
Yeah.
The metal or ceramic circles that go on top of the jets.
You don't have to do anything with them. They do not come in contact with the food and the kosher in the first place.
Just washing them.
Yes.
Wait, how long do you have to soak the knobs?
15, 20 minutes. That's
it. Oh,
all.
That's it?
Now, once we have a stovetop, which is kosher, now we can take a Pesach kettle and start to make hot water. Now, once you start to make hot water, we can kasher most of the things that need kasher. Right? Most of the things that we actively need to kasher, we kasher with hot water. So, let's start off with sinks. Number one note about sinks is to close the hot water 24 hours before you want the kasher. You cannot use the sink with hot chometz for 24 hours, and maybe with hot anything for 24 hours, even better. It's a shayla and a shenem for 24 hours before you do the kashering. So find out where the check valve is under the sink, close the hot water so nobody by mistake puts the hot water on and sets the clock back, and you get stuck, you know, now you're 10 hours behind because somebody, 10 hours after you started, somebody put the hot water on. And you have to be careful not to dump anything hot into the sink in that time period. That's step number one. Now, sinks could be made for the purposes of our shiur tonight, either of stainless or of any other material, enamel, porcelain, whatever it may be. If they're made of enamel or porcelain, these are not materials which are 100% do, which are kasherable for Pesach. Therefore, I suggest you pour hot water on them nevertheless and down the drain. And after that, you have to cover them, whether you want to cover them with aluminum foil or commercially bought sink liner, whatever, but they need to be covered. If you have a stainless thing, then you need just to pour hot water on it very slowly, so you're getting a stream directly on each part of the sink and over the spout as well, where the hot water comes out, and pour some down the drain. Now, beyond that, down the drain, you should pour something. It's at some point it's going to stay there for also about 15 minutes. In other words, not while you're pouring the water down, either before you start or after you finish with the hot water. Pour down something, a little bleach, a little ammonia, one of them, not both. Both of them make a nasty combination. And leave it there for 15, 20 minutes and then put on the cold water and flush it out. That's to make sure that any food that fell down the drain will also be caused to deteriorate before Pesach and not be a problem.
So wait, you're doing the bleach before you pour the boiling water?
You could do that 15 minutes before, or when you finish the boiling water at the end, one of the two, whichever one you want. It's better, I think, if you do it before, but choose whichever one. Now, we're not finished. First, let's do the basics of the sink. If it has a strainer which unscrews from the spout, change it for Pesach. You, whatever the plugs are for the drains, you may have things to plug up the drains, should be changed for Pesach. And if you have a spritzer, it depends. If it's made of metal, then pull it out and dump hot water on it. And that's enough. And let some water out from the... and spray some water out from it. If it's plastic, just cover it up and don't use it. It can't be kosher for Pesach. Yep.
The spritzer is metal, but the hose is plastic.
You should leave it away from Pesach.
If someone's using a sink, like an insert, so the whole dishes are just going in this.
Yeah.
They also cover the sink.
Yeah.
What?
If they're using like
an insert.
No, that's the covering. You don't have to do it anymore. Yeah, you should dump hot water on it and kosher it anyhow in case there's some backup. Yeah.
If the filter on the faucet doesn't come out, you know, on the spout, so how do you clean that? Just
let the water run. It'll clean it itself. Nothing's going to stay there. Okay. And I dump hot water. I spritz some hot water up on the bottom of the faucet as well with the kettle. I just splash up with a little bit.
You spritz hot water up?
Up from the kettle, I just told me, a little spritz. Oh, we'll get to that. Now, all of this is assuming that you don't put hot pots normally into the sink the whole year. But if you have a stainless and you put hot pots into them, then you have a problem. You should still pour hot water on them, but you still have to line them. There is a means of getting around this, but it's a very difficult means in the home, so I don't recommend it. That's as far as stovetops and sinks are concerned. Tables, just clean them well, and if they're expandable tables, open up the crack in the table. The opening can clean out in the crack and cover with something thick, preferably something with a heat. Does not go all the way through from the table that you use for chametz to what you use it. And after that, so we clean them and cover them, and that's all. That's what you need to do for a table. Refrigerators, you should wash them out well.
Kitchen and dining room.
Clean gasket on top, clean all around the gasket. A lot of it gets cooked up and even on top of the gasket. And in general, there's no need to cover the shelves. If you want to, you may, and some people do, but some people are Heinemann is not particularly a fan because the refrigerator does not work properly when the shelves are covered because the air does not circulate properly. That's why the shelves are made usually the way they are, with these wire racks so that the air should separate. And tables, obviously, kitchen tables and dining room tables are the same in that regard.
If you put a hot pot on the
fridge. Yeah.
If you put a hot pot on the fridge.
If you are in the habit of putting hot pots into the fridge, so it may be preferable to cover the shelves. It's not absolute. It's, if nothing spills on them generally, then you don't have to. It's just from the hot pot. But if you're concerned that things spill in the fridge, also hot things, and there's a hot pot there, then you should cover the shelf where that takes place. Countertops are, in a way, very simple. And what is simple is the following. This natural stone means they cut a piece of stone out of the mountain, they brought it to your house, they cut it to size, and that's what you have. If you have that, you're in good luck as long as you don't put hot pots on it directly during the year. Just carefully pour hot water all over it, and it's kosher, no problems. If you put hot water on it, then you just better cover it up. I don't think here you need to put hot water on it. It's enough to cover it, and that's enough if you put hot pots directly on it. Now, if you're dealing with stone, which is not a solid piece that came from the mountain, it's a composite, whatever it may be, corian, and it's quartz, which are not man-made. You know, they are man-made, as far as all the research that I could do tells me. They did not come from the mountain that way. They were reprocessed by men. They ground them up, and they put them back together, And they made designs. One of the ways of telling, in fact, is if the design is uneven, it's natural. If the design is very even throughout, then you know it's man-made. But most of these materials are man-made. I'm talking corion and quartz, etc. And therefore, they cannot be kashered for Pesach. And you have to cover them well, and that suffices. Now, what's important also, not as important as covering as by the stove, but nevertheless it's a very wise and smart and proper idea, is to cover the splashbacks around the countertops as well. Because they do, we wash them down, but nevertheless sometimes there are hot things there, things splash on them. So it was an extra precaution to make sure that if we don't trafe the place up, we should cover the splashbacks as well. I cover them all the way up. You know, they're not that tall or high altogether. How much are they? 14, 15 inches, 16 inches, something like that. I cover the whole thing.
It's the side of the refrigerator sometimes.
Yeah.
What if they're made from stone?
What?
The splash bag.
If it's, they're usually tiles, the stone. It's not, you know, unless you have real granite in the back. If you have real granite and you want to bar the splashing cup water on it, you could do that too. If you have actual granite or marble. Now, the most daunting challenge when it comes to koshering is the are ovens. Ovens are very, very hard, and you have to be very careful how you kosher them. The first two things I want to tell you are safety things. Number one, do not put your head inside while cleaning the oven. That's not, it's a way to get hurt, for cause the cleaners to spill onto your face and the eyes, chalila. So do not put your head inside. Number two, especially if you're going to use cause the cleaners to clean the oven, invest in getting yourself a pair of gloves and goggles for your eyes. A few dollars for your eyes are an investment, a very worthwhile investment to make sure nothing splashes into your eyes and hurts your eyes. Now, the basic story is, as far as I'm concerned in the halacha, there are self-cleaning and non-self-cleaning ovens. If it's a self-cleaning oven, so life is simple. But don't just turn it on and to kosher it for Pesach. You have to make sure that it's nominally clean. I had a fellow that I was friendly with, and everything was perfect in his house. It was the night before Yontif. He put on the self-cleaning oven. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, flames started shooting out at events because there was grease inside the oven that he forgot about. Fortunately, he was a gadgety type of guy, and he grabbed the fire extinguisher from the kitchen, and he was able to put out the fire before it did harm to anything. The fire department came, all was well, and he was just left to clean up the soot which flew all over the place. But nevertheless, it's not what we want to happen. So basically, you have to have it nominally clean. If you have a lot of grease in there, you're asking for a fire, and that we don't want. So if it's a self-cleaning oven, do a basic cleaning. 3 hours of the racks inside. The racks may discolor a little bit. They may get a little bit out of shape, but they'll keep working, whatever, in my stove. They keep working for years, and that's what you need to kosher them for Pesach. Now, does the door need to be covered or not? This is a whole pilpul that's gone up and back. Do we need to cover the doors? We don't need to cover the doors. So my observation is the following. Many of the self-cleaning ovens vent through the door. That's how they vent. If you watch how they're made, there's a vent that goes on the bottom of the door and through the top of the door, and that's how they vent. So look inside the glass. If inside the glass it looks clean, then you don't need to cover them. If inside you see an oily residue, then you should cover them, because that means there could be some chametz, oily chametz that got into there, which the self-cleaning did not take care of, and therefore cover the entire door up from the inside and pull the foil around all the way around to the outside so that you can hold it down in place and it won't fall off. But that's what you have to do with the self-cleaning. Again, 3 hours on the self-cleaning. Now, if it's a non-self-cleaning, this is a very daunting challenge. Number one, you need to clean them thoroughly. So this is a whole problem. Just to get them scrubbed clean is a job of many hours. You have to put cleansers inside and let the cleansers burn and put the oven on and let it heat cool down and to wash them and all that takes place until we finally get them relatively, until we get them clean, not relatively clean. After that, we should put them 90 minutes on the highest heat. And then we still have two more parts to do. One is the racks. The racks have to be put in, should give to somebody that has a self-cleaning oven to do the racks for you. And the final thing is to cover the inside of the oven with foil. Now this is a little bit, you have to be a little bit handy to do this. I'll tell you basically how to do it. Is first cover the bottom of the oven, that's easy enough. Then make yourself a long U-shaped piece of foil that's going to go around the three walls of the oven, other than the door. Long enough, one long piece that's going to start on one side, go down the side, across the back, and around down the other side. And it should be long enough that it comes out of the oven in the front on both sides. Now, you need also a sufficient amount in the height. You want it that it's relatively loose inside when you start it because you want to be able to push the foil in where the tracks are that hold the racks so that it's relatively tight to the walls where the tracks are that hold the racks. The reason for that, you're going to... Now, because you're going to have to take your racks at the end and put them back into the oven. So you need to be able to slide them in. And if the foil is not relatively tight to the sides, it's going to get stuck. Once you get those racks back in, do not move them the rest of Pesach. Just leave them alone. And put the food in and take the food out, but don't try to pull on the racks. If you're going to pull on the racks, they're going to tear up the foil and they're going to have a major problem. Now, I didn't tell you yet. Now, covering the top of the oven, you also have to cover. And to cover the top of the oven, you now, once you have the U-shaped piece of foil, you can now drape a piece of foil across the top, which will be held up on three sides by that U-shaped piece of foil under it. And therefore, the ceiling piece of the oven will also stay in place, supported by the U-shaped piece of foil, which is under it. And finally, you need to cover the doors entirely, the entire inside of the door. So this is a tricky job. You know, as I tell people all the time, if you're buying a new stove, do yourself a favor and buy yourself a self-cleaning. You'll have a lot less grief when Pesach comes than you would have otherwise. So it's a well worthwhile investment. But this is the hardest part of the cleaning. The hardest part of the cleaning is certainly the question of the oven. The oven is the most difficult kashering that we have.
Microwave.
Now, we need to touch upon microwaves. Now, microwaves come in varied versions. Microwaves come with plastic walls. You have plastic walls inside, so Rav Moshe Feinstein did not allow plastic to be kashered for Pesach. So you just saved yourself a job. You're not kashering that microwave for Pesach. So that's over. If it has stainless walls, then you can kosher it. The way to kosher it is you clean very well, put in a cup of water for 10 minutes to steam it up. Now, let's go back a step. Before you put in the water, the turntable is not going to be kosherable. The old turntables were made of earthenware. The newer turntables are all made of glass. We Ashkenazim do not kosher glass for Pesach. So consequently, you cannot use the turntable. So take the turntable out and whatever else is holding it up, the plastic pieces on the bottom, and put them away for Pesach someplace and bring them back after Yom Tov. Now, if you have milachiks and fleishik ones, which are similar, make sure to mark which is the milachiks and which is the fleishik so you don't have to start kashering them after Yom Tov when you come to put them back. Once you have you have scrubbed out the inside well. You take a cup of water, you put it inside, you pour a little water under where the cup is, so on the part under the cup will also get kashered, and then put it on for about 10 minutes. In about 10 minutes, what's going to happen is that it will steam up the entire inside of the microwave, and that's the way. The only reason that the microwave needs to be kosher is because the steam coming off the food makes the inside of the microwave hot. It is not a situation of a stove where the walls actually get hot in and of themselves. If you have a convention microwave, so you should also, if you have a convention microwave, you should put it on, besides on the convection part, for whatever, let's say about the longest time you would ever use it during the year. Now the rack, I take the rack away and I put away the rack away. If there's a rack, I put it away for Pesach too. It's just very, very difficult. Anything with so many crossbars in between is very, very difficult to kosherize. You know, in commercial kosher, in commercial koshering, there are ways to do it, but they're not ways you can do at home. But we're doing commercial koshering with that. We take all the racks. Remember, I told you the stovetops are made of solid steel on commercial kitchens. We pile up all the racks in a huge pile. We cover them over with aluminum foil, and we put on all the burners, and we leave them there for a few hours. The things are roaring red hot after a while. And there's nothing that survives, no chametz, nothing survives that fiery attack. When we finish kosherizing commercial facilities, the non-Jews say, "Wow, I wish they could clean like this. You know, some of these guys should come clean like this sometimes during the year too, to put this kitchen, you know, in tip-top shape." But in the home, we can't do it, and I would not recommend putting it into the self-cleaning. It's likely it's a low gauge, and it's likely to warp if you put it inside. Now, also we have instant hot. Some people have instant hot in the kitchen, and that you can kasher. You pour hot water on the spout, and then let out some water from it, from the inside, and that's kosher. You don't need to do more than that, and that's acceptable to be used for Pesach. These are the basic things that we're likely to do. In general, as you know from previous years, I'm not a big fan of kosherizing. Pots and pans and things for yontif. They're very difficult. Non-commercial pans are very, very hard to kasher. The simple reason, we have these very cute curled edges, which make them look very nice. But it's places that we cannot clean thoroughly under. And therefore, it's questionable if we could really kasher them for Pesach. Commercial pots do not come with those curled lips. They have very, very wide and open underneath. And what we typically do is we take blow torches with professionals and we clean the lips of them with blow torches, which are not, both will ruin your pots at home. And I recommend, if you're not trained to use it, I do not recommend that you be busy using a blowtorch.
Mm-hmm. No,
all coffee makers and all of that, you should not kasher for Pesach. Just put them away and get rid of them and get new ones for Yom Tov. And, of course, crock pots, you cannot kasher altogether. The inside of them is made of earthenware, of cheres, and you cannot kasher them. What you can kasher for Pesach, well, the only thing just about that I'm interested in kashering, if you have a becher for Pesach, a becher principally should not need kashering because we never use it with hot chametz. So it should not need kashering.
You don't kasher the becher?
No. But we do kasher it, and that's the reason that I allow kashering, since really it does not really need much kashering. But I allow kashering. The reason we kasher it is because we tend to wash it with chametz dikakelim. And since we wash it with chametz dikakelim, it is a question that it may be chametz dik. But it's not no real chametz together with it, and therefore there's no concern that I have that you shouldn't kasher it. So that's the one thing that I allow people, if you don't have a Pesach dikabecha, or you want to use the one from the whole year, you may do so.
Okay.
Schnapps is also usually cold, and it's nothing sticky at the end of the day, so you can pour hot water to it and kasher with that. Be'ezus Hashem. Okay, let's take questions presently. Yeah.
When you were speaking about the microwave, you said the plastic thing that holds the turntable. I didn't.
Any plastic parts which hold the turntable, just take them out if you can.
You should remove the plastic.
If it removes,
and if it doesn't,
so then you can cut, leave it in there for Pesach. If it doesn't,
and you said if it's stainless steel, so I know our microwave is metal
As long as it's metal, it's fine.
And if the microwave is you said something about the hood, you know, the hood over the oven.
The hood over the oven should be covered.
The microwave is the hood.
It still should be covered from the bottom because you're not kashering the outside.
So you can cover the vents, but you can cover everything
else. Yes.
With aluminum foil?
Yes.
And would you buy the aluminum foil that's very...
I can't.
In Parapunk.
They may have it in some of the stores here, too.
Try Wasserman.
Okay, yeah.
Is there anything with products this year you need to look out for?
The nuts.
What you have to be very careful about, I was investigating Kirkland, you know, from BJ's, the nuts, and they're not 100% perfect for Pesach, let's put it that way. If you use them, I wouldn't say that it's usher, you know, banned anything, but they should not really be used.
If it says that
they were processed, if, for example, some of them say on them they were processed on lines, they may have wheat in them. And the reason is they don't have dedicated lines in the factory where it's packed. I just, in fact, confirmed this today. They did not have dedicated lines, and they pack trail mixes which have chametz, real chametz in them, in these lines. So since they're not cleaned out for Pesach, that lechatchila they should not be used for Pesach, the nuts that are packed on them. So that's what else is new. Almond flour, apparently, if it's kosher for a whole year, seems to be kosher for Pesach too, as far as I'm able to determine. That's one of the interesting things of this year, the way it's made. They're made in gluten-free facilities, so there's no
chametz. Wait, so it doesn't have to say OUP, you're saying?
Not right.
Correct. And as every year, the vintage seltzer is kosher to Pesach, even the flavored vintage seltzer is kosher to Pesach. The sun sweet, the prunes and the prune juice are kosher for Pesach. Yeah, the sun-made retail pack commercial raisins, not wholesale pack. Wholesale pack, I mean, there's some boxes that they take out of big boxes, there's a whole different story, they're processed differently. But the retail pack, sun-made raisins, are kosher to Pesach, and you can use just a number of the common products that people tend to ask about. Yes?
How about the paper goods?
Paper goods, listen, is an old story, an absolute answer we don't have to this, you know. As a chumrah, I don't use the simple paper goods. I tend to use plastic.
Plasticized.
You know, plasticized plates. That's what I use for Pesach.
Epic products, I think.
What about styrofoam?
Styrofoam is absolutely fine.
You have to look at every product, actually.
Yeah.
Are Costco nuts okay?
No,
they're not, unless they say for Passover. They don't even want to, they just tell you. If it says wheat on there, forget about it, you know.
It's plasticized.
It's, you know.
It's used. Oh, you list.
Listen, if it's all you checked it out, it's fine. But as I said, but it's not simple.
Is there a problem using regular paper on Pesach?
Yeah.
What regular paper?
Paper goods.
Like what?
It's preferable not to. It's not also. It's preferable.
The Dixie's plastic.
It's preferable not to use them. Not the Dixies and not the paint paper plates. You know. Preferable not to use them. Not usher, but preferable not to use them. Now, one of the things that you have to look out for, and there's been a little bit of improvement in this year. This is a long-standing problem. One of the problems the kashrus agencies have not been able to solve is the fact that the packaging of chametz products and Pesach products is basically identical. You buy the same thing during the year, and the same one that's kosher to Pesach. Other than the kosher Pesach logo, everything is the same about it. And the kashrus agencies have not really been able, for varied cost problems with the companies, to be able to prevail upon them to make separate labeling. It has started to happen in some companies that, in fact, have made...
Like the Coke bottle tops.
Have made the Coke bottle tops, a different one. The fish companies, I think Benzies now, the Pesach ones are black and the regular ones are blue. They're starting to come into the market. But every year, there are plenty of misfires that people wind up with products which are not kosher to Pesach. They cook them in the kitchens, they consume them, and only after the fact do they realize. So consequently, every single... When we go to the rocking horse, because of the fact that it's not kosher the whole year, our mashgichim have a very simple rule. Every single food item, box, can, whatever it is, bag of food that's taken out, may not be put into service until the person in the kitchen comes and asks the mashgiach, Rabbi, may I use this bag of food? Nothing, not a single thing. And that's the way to make sure that nothing pops out from some hidden place in the kitchen by mistake and gets put into use. And that's what we need to do for Pesach. For Pesach, we need to check every single can when we're about to put it into use in the kitchen, stop for a moment and check. Does it have Pesach certification? And many people find that all of a sudden there are a few items that made it through the Pesach shopping, onto the shelves, and on up to cooking day, which are not kosher to Pesach. So every single item, just stop for a moment and make sure, confirm the fact that it is kosher for Pesach. You have one of my biggest horror story is I got a call on Chol HaMoed from some other area, not from this part of town, but it could have happened there too. Someone ordered gefilte fish for Pesach. They got a delivery, they put it into the freezer, and they took the fish out, they cooked it for the Seder night, first day on the second day on Tev. Motzei, the first day, is whatever, someone in the family goes and takes out one of these things of fish, and it was the Chometz Tikkun fish, it wasn't the Pesach Tikkun one. Right? But all the effort that went into koshering the house for Pesach, they served Chometz Tikkun fish at the Seder, the pots, the pans, the dishes, a mess, a royal mess. Why? Because the world is made of human beings, Rabbi Yisrael. Human beings make mistakes. That's the way it is. And you can have, in the commercial world, there's one of the vendors and the Shomer Shabbos people and very, very honorable people, and they even, for whatever reason, they have non-kosher in their distribution facility too. Fine. Be that as it may. I'm not getting involved with that shayla. There are those that allow it. Their Rav allowed them to do it. They have a special mashgiach on the loading dock so that the places which are glatt kosher that they supply, the treif should never get into those deliveries. So these are people that care. They're paying for a mashgiach on the loading dock to make sure the treif never migrates to the kosher. And once or twice a year, the treif shows up in the glatt kosher facilities too. Human beings are subject to error. Now, one of the problems in stores is that people go into a store. Now, the first part, the first line of the Manish Tana, Shabbachol HaLeilas Ono Oichlun Chometz U'Matzah. You know, the store has chometz and matzah. We have non-Pesach things and Pesach things in the store at the same time. So now what happens? Somebody goes into the store and they pick up an item, jelly, and they want it for Pesach. All as they're going around the store, they come to the Pesach section, they realize, hey, wait a second. I picked up the chometz tikkun jelly, not the Pesach tikkun jelly. So what do? They take the Pesach, the chometz tikkun jelly, put it down on the Pesach shelf, take the Pesach one, put it in the shopping cart, and they march along. Every single day in the groceries, this goes on. So now you're the next guy that comes down. Oh, this is all the place where the white paper is. This is the kosher of Pesach. There's the jelly company, whatever it may be that I like, Polonaise, Libra, or whatever your cup of tea is. There it is on the shelf, boom, I put it right into my basket and I go home. And I haven't the foggiest idea that I just picked up the chometz one that the other guy dropped off here. Goes on every single day in the groceries. So this is something that we need to be very, very attentive to if we are going to fulfill the dinner properly. Now, there's another thing. You know, Pesach is the holiday of chumras. We have more chumras in Pesach than we have in any other holiday the entire year. Okay, there is even a formulation in the halachas form called chumra de Pesach. Pesach, we take stringent stance. And because it is the time, one time in the year, when there's no bittul, even a tiny bit of chametz on Pesach makes something osur. There's also the fact that noisin tam livgam, old chametz, which is already within a kli, and it's more than 24 hours old, also makes a problem on Pesach. So all of this, all of these are problems. So we have to be very, very careful. Now, one of the things we need to be careful about, you know, there is a chumrah to use non-mevushal wine, wine which was not pasteurized, to use for Kiddush. Some do it every Friday night, some do it only at the night of the Seder, they're so careful the whole year, they're not concerned about it. It's a chumrah, the Shulchan Aruch does not require it. Now, you have to ask yourself if this chumrah is befitting to your circumstance. Do you have non-Jewish help in your house that work in the kitchen? If you have non-Jewish help to come into your house, you should not have yayin that's not mevushal in your house. If you have non-from people that are going to frequent the Seder, you should not have yayin which is not cooked, not mevushal. I was at a Seder once, in a place where there was zero expectation that there would be a non-from person. I was at the Seder with our Rosh Hashiva, Rav Hanoch Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, and one did not expect non-from people to be at the Seder. But by a strange circumstance, a non-from guy was invited for the second Seder. On the first day of Yom Tov, the Rebbetzin Allah Shalom invited him to spend the second Seder with the Rosh Hashiva. And I was at the table, and he was pretty much almost, I think, across from me, a little to the left. And the wine was non-mevushal wine, because they were not anticipating having anyone non-from there. That's all the wine that there was. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the Seder, this guy picks up the wine and he pours himself a cup of wine. So the Rebbetzin Allah Shalom was a Hawkeye, and she saw this took place. And she just reacted very calmly, and a few minutes later, she let a little time go by. She came and she scooped up the bottle and disappeared into the kitchen, whatever, I guess, poured down the drain, never to be seen again. But, you know, these are the things that go on. So we have to be very careful. We're coming to be machmer, to be more stringent. But we're more stringent than the halacha demands. That could be fine at times. But if it's going to cause us to violate the halacha, then we failed in what we set out to do.
Well, you put her where? Night, Tasha. There's the water right over here. The water?
Yeah, let me take some.
So you put it away at night before you go to sleep.
Whatever. You should be very, very careful with non-mevushal wine in the house if you're going to have non-Jews there. Because of the fact that in the morning after the Seder, I usually have a non-Jewish woman come to clean up the dining room again, clean off the tables, sweep the floors, do the dishes, set the table for the first day of Yom Tov. So when the Seder concludes, any bottles which are open of non-mevushal wine, I take them upstairs and I put them away in the closet in my bedroom. So that there's no place, you know, and I bring them out again as needed for the second night. But after the first Seder, take all the yarn wine that's not cooked and bring it upstairs and tuck it away.
Tablecloth.
Now, in linen, which was used during the year, if you want to use it when it was food, if you have a tablecloth, if you wash it and there are no stains left in it, you could use it for Pesach too. If there are stains left in it, it should not be used for Pesach, and you should get yourself another one. Okay, any questions about what we've done until now? Mendel.
Two questions of it. The Rosh says that if there's residue in the glass, you should cover it. Is it the entire door or just the lower glass?
I cover the entire door. That's all. That's
all.
Yeah.
Gaskets.
Well, come bring it around the outside. Yeah.
What kind of meat you could use for the Seder?
What?
What kind of meat you could use for the Seder?
Is it closed, though?
It closes. It does close. It does close, yes. I can tell you from experience.
Do you have to run it along the bottom under where the hinge is?
No, I don't run it. I don't run it along the bottom. I run it down till the bottom.
You have to use the residue that remains.
If it's just powdery, it's nothing. If you see something that looks really unburned, then you have to do something about it.
Right.
But But usually, yeah, but usually that doesn't happen.
It's sometimes, and it's not, I know the powder, it's baked in black.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about that. That to me is burned up stuff.
It's planet.
Yeah.
Rob, can you address Friday night with heating up the food at the Seder and putting things from the oven, closing the door?
It's no different than any other Friday night. Whatever you do on Friday night.
Oven's not usually on.
You should keep it about, somewhere about a temperature of about 250. At 250, it's not certain that when you open the oven, the fire will go on. So you can open the oven quickly, take out the food, some of the food, close the oven, and take out more food later.
So you can open it more than once?
Yes.
You can't put back in?
No, on Shabbos, no. Yes.
Can a warming jar be kosher?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Can you just clarify what Lindsay asked about the residue? If it's not powdered and it's black, you can just leave
if
it.
It's,
well, you should try it.
If you can try it, if it comes off readily, scrape it off. Other than that, I wouldn't worry about it.
And the door itself, sometimes there's like black burns on
it? Nah, don't worry about it. Burned is burned. Right. It's not common anymore. Yes.
If an oven door has vent holes, I imagine you cut holes.
Yes, you need to cut holes for the vents, yes.
I was under the impression that you couldn't open and close the oven. It's only because my husband, I thought he said that we cannot open it.
So I just told you, if you put it about 250 degrees, you can.
Because it does, that's just...
It's not going to go on so rapidly at that temperature. Yes.
Does water need any special extreme
temperature? Water? I don't believe so. I mean, but... Just check whatever you find in the lists. I don't want to tell you definitively. As far as I know, it does not. But, you know, I never saw that water should need a special hechsher for Pesach.
No.
Yes.
So on a regular Shabbos, if your oven is on a low heat, 250 or lower,
yeah,
you can take different pieces of food out at different times?
Yes.
What about
275? I don't know. Whatever. Listen, what we
warm enough. I like 285 to 90.
Listen, I think, 250 I know is a good number.
That's it,
you know. Listen, we're having an auction here tonight. 300.
How about the meat? What do I need for the
thing?
Yeah.
What about quinoa?
Quinoa, the story is the following. Quinoa comes from two places in South America. One of them is Bolivia. I forgot what the other one is. Now, a lot of it comes from Bolivia. Now, the problem is you got to fly to Bolivia, and you have to travel, a mashkiach has to travel overland about 5 hours to get to where the quinoa is packed. Now, what they did discover in the last years is that quinoa can grow next to other grains and can have other grains mixed into it. And they also found out that the sacks that they use for transporting it have at times been used for other grains beforehand. So you cannot use the quinoa unless there is a hashkocha on it for Pesach. And not all the kashrus organizations, whatever, made it to Bolivia this year for whatever the reasons may be. So not all of them have quinoa for Pesach. So this is also true when you have, for example, we say that Sfardim use rice on Pesach. That's true. But you have to know which rice has no concern that there's any chametz mixed together with it. So that you have to check with those in the Sfardim community that research these things. Yeah, what else?
Yeah. Potatoes are used all year round, and maybe food's been put on directly on the table.
What?
Tablecloths.
Yeah.
Treat them just like the table, just wash them, and then double cup it.
Yeah, that's what I do. But it should be one of the things that you put down on the table should be thick enough that the heat doesn't go through it. And one should be waterproof.
So with the table pad, you put a tinfoil layer on it.
That's
wash
fine.
It and just you don't have to do two layers.
No, that's fine.
Because then we have also other things.
Yeah, well, it's thick enough. It's good enough. It's better that heat should not go through.
What kind of thickness?
Just
like aluminum foil?
Not even foil, whatever. It's a cardboard, plastic. It's not going to, it's enough.
Something heavy.
Yeah, you're not putting hot pots, remember, there, on your table. Yes.
With braces, you have to stop with the...
Braces, it depends who you ask. Some people tell me I'm from the big Machmirim, and some people tell me I'm from the big Mechilim. So what could I do? I say if you have braces, you should not eat chametz not hot chametz, not dry chametz for 24 hours before, so that whatever you have eaten will deteriorate in your mouth and will hopefully will be inedible by the time Pesach begins. So some people came, Rabbi, you're such a machmer. Nobody's like, well, where's machmer? Do you do orthodontist? Rabbi, you're such a maker. I can open it up after 5 days and find food inside. So, yes, before the Zman Achilas Chametz, yes.
That's chametz like real solid chametz.
Pizza, all the everyone always.
Yes, anything solid or sticky. What?
Not just hot.
Not just hot. Correct.
Even liquid?
If it's sticky liquid. Okay, anything else?
If we have a break front with like glass, you know, you can see the dishes inside, can we just tape it or do we have to cover them?
Let me clarify this. There's some things that are sources of confusion, and this is one of them. The Torah says, Lo yirah lecha, that chometz should not be seen. Shas tells us it does not mean to be seen, it means to be owned. There's no Easter on seeing chometz. I'm not recommending this, but if you want to, you know, think of a challah you're going to eat after Yontif. So you can take a challah, put it inside the china closet, tie it closed, sell it to the goy, and you can look at it every day at Pesach. If that's what, you know. There's no Easter on that. Easter is not to see. The Easter is to own. So you don't have to cover up chometz that it becomes invisible. It has to be inaccessible, so you shouldn't come to use it. But there's no Easter. Now, it's important to put when you put your chometz dikapatz away, you put them, cover them all over, that it's very clear to anyone that these are chometz dikapatz, and they shouldn't come to be used on Pesach. If we leave chometz dikakalim around, we may find that they somehow migrate into the Pesach production. I once had a shayla that there was a household that had two blenders. One was chometz and one was Pesach, and as life is, they were both the same. And in the last days of Pesach, they managed to use the cup, you know, from the chometz tikka blender. You know, the knives and everything were in the plate, but so I had to go over the whole menu with them, and there were no onions, and there was nothing charif, so it came out that everything was kosher, but by the skin of their teeth. So when the Achrayim say we have to put the dishes away and close them up to make sure we didn't use them, it's a rice, well worth talking about. Now, if you have baby foods, bottles, and all of this stuff, you should have new ones, new bottles for Pesach, new pacifiers for Pesach, and they should be washed in the bathroom sink, not in the kitchen sink. At the very least, they contain kidneys. Now, we do have to be careful what we eat for Pesach. We cannot use roasted items. Roast chickens, roast meats cannot be used for the Seder. So that also we need to be careful about. Right? It's very interesting. The Gemara says that there was Torish Ish Roimi, and he used to make a gedima kulis. He used to take a whole goat, and they would roast it, and they would eat it on the night of the Pesach, zecher to the common Pesach. So the Shah says, Ilmole Tudis Ato, if you wouldn't have been such a revered and respected figure as Tudis, we would have put you in Cherem. Because you may cause people, in fact, to think that you can still bring the Korban Pesach, and they'll bring a Korban Pesach in Chutz La'aretz. So Chazal banned us for that reason. We cannot use the Korban Pesach as the halach of Tzliyei Shumatzos Amrorim Yochlu. It has to be roasted on a fire. So all roasted meats may not be used at the Seder for that reason. Yes?
What's the parameters of roasted? What if something goes in the oven but with liquid?
And if it has liquid? My parameter is the following. If at the end of the day it has a lot of liquid and it has a steamed taste to it, then it's mutter. If you cook it on the open flame with a little bit of liquid and it tastes roasted and not steamed, then it's usser. That's the parameter that I use. Here, Avoisa, I think we're about to wrap up because it's time for Mar. My koichas are gone. May the Rabbeinu Shel Olam give you the koyach and the inspiration to clean properly for Pesach and to enjoy the inspiration of this phenomenal time.